This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Hey everyone, great show today as we revisit episode 47 of the TriDot Podcast, which originally published on August 8th of 2020. The episode was called Consider the Conditions, Adjusting Intensities to Your Training Environment, which is basically just a fancy way of saying adjusting your paces according to how hot or not hot it is outside. We are inching closer to episode 200 of the TriDot Podcast, and as the list of episodes grows, we want to make sure that some of our core episodes don't get lost in the shuffle. If you scan our list of episodes and you see the word revisiting in the episode name, let that stand as a beacon calling you to listen, as all of our revisiting episodes are handpicked by our staff for their importance. As for episode 47, knowing how hard to go or how much to back off your paces due to the weather in which you are doing your training is crucial to doing the right training right. And this episode goes hard on how to do just that. I can't wait to hear all about it. Joining me for this revisiting is TriDot Media contributor Vanessa Rongsley. Vanessa is from Calgary, Canada, but is currently living in Sydney, Australia with her family. Vanessa has been a TriDot ambassador since 2021 and a member of the TriDot Media team since 2022. She is currently training for her very first Ironman California 2023. Vanessa, thanks for hopping on and kind of re-listening with me to episode 47 of the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. It's great to be here with you and with all the listeners. This is a really important topic and something that's been very important to me as I've made this jump from a very cold and dry climate to a very hot and humid climate. So it's perfect for where I'm at in my stage of life.
Yes, very curious to hear your thoughts on it. You were handpicked for this episode for all the reasons above. Vanessa, before we get too deep into the episode, I do have a unscheduled question for you. Our social media team, if anybody follows TriDot System on Instagram or on Facebook, they have once a week been pushing out a post kind of highlighting a different staff member, a different team member of the TriDot team. And Jenna Gorham, who's been doing those posts, has been doing a fabulous job. They're very engaging. And one of the things that she's doing is two truths and a lie. So she's having all of our staff members for that post supply her with two things about us that are true and one thing that is a lie. And then anybody following us on social media can take a guess as which one of the things they think is the lie. So anyway, all that to say, your post went up just this past week at the time we're recording this episode. And I was looking at your list for the two truths and a lie. And there was one thing on there that turns out to be very true. And I'm glad that it's true because I want to hear the story behind this. It is a true thing, according to this post, that you broke your nose, as in the nose on your face, while you were playing the piano. And I need to hear, forget our listeners, I need to hear how you managed to break your nose on your face playing the piano. Please amuse us. What's the backstory there?
Okay, well, for starters, I have red hair, which is correlated with being ambidextrous, which is correlated with having a very high rate of injury. And I'm also left-handed. So this is like a whole, I'm just setting the scene because I'm injury prone, to say the least.
Okay.
So I was 13 years old and I was practicing piano and my dog, I had just gotten this new little puppy that I'd been begging my parents for like a decade. And I was playing the piano. No one else was home. I was all by myself. And he walked behind me on the piano bench. And I was still in that phase where I was like, oh my gosh, he's just so cute. And so I leaned backwards to pet the dog. And somehow I tipped backwards off of the piano bench. And it like the piano bench flipped on top of me. And the piano bench, like, you know how they open and you can store stuff in them?
Yeah.
Well.
Oh yeah. And they're dense,
right? Yeah. And so this is like a deep, dense wood piano bench, and it landed on top of my lap, and it opened onto my nose, like the opening part. Like it broke my nose, and so I was like scrambling on the floor, and my dog was terrified of what just happened. And I got up, and my nose was bleeding everywhere, and I was all by myself, and I was like, "What just happened?" And then, I had a broken nose, and I had black eyes, and that I have to say, I've broken many a bone in my body, and that was probably the most painful broken bone I've ever experienced. And the pain lasted for a good like 6 to 8 years. It was a long recovery period. So yeah, that's the story.
I mean, even besides the pain, just right? The moment sounds traumatic.
Yeah.
First
it was
of all,
very traumatic.
For you and the dog, yeah. Frankly, and the piano. I mean, the piano is probably like, what?
Yeah.
Okay. So with that story out of the way, thank you so much for telling me that. I had to know, I had to ask, and we have an extra time on this episode. So here's how today's episode will work. If you've heard one of our revisiting episodes, you're familiar with the format. Vanessa and I will reshare the warm-up question, and we'll chit-chat about the warm-up question that aired on this episode. Then we'll get into the main set, and Vanessa and I will sit back, and we're just going to listen to the main set today and just soak it in. It was myself interviewing Jeff Boer and Jeff Rains about this topic of considering the conditions in our training. And so all of us will listen to that together. We recorded it years ago. It is fantastic information. It's definitely a core hallmark episode for our podcast. And then when it's over, Vanessa and I will stick around. We will do a fresh cool down where the two of us will just kind of reflect and share our thoughts on the episode, having heard it fresh right here in the moment. So without further ado, we will step out of the way and get into the warm-up question so that we can get on with this revisiting of this episode. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
When we revisit a podcast episode, we also like to revisit its warm-up question. And our warm-up question on episode 47 was, what was a time you used cycling or running to run an errand you would normally do with a car? TriDot founder Jeff Boer shared a story about literally taking lunch up to his wife when she had accidentally left her work lunch at home. And instead of taking it up to her in the car, he ran her lunch up to her place of employment so she could have lunch. Jeff Rains talked about how he used to drive a school bus for the school system, and he would actually sneak a run in while he was waiting by the bus before his bus route would start. And I told a story of running 5 miles from my job at the television studio to my local Midas car mechanic to pick up my newly fixed car. It sounded like it'd be easy enough, but it was a 102-degree Dallas day, and I just about didn't make it, that's for sure. Vanessa, throwing this question over to you, what is an errand that you have run on your bike or on your feet that you usually, maybe probably, should have done with a car?
Well, I'm going to the opposite end of the temperature spectrum for you when you did your run to the car dealership. But
okay.
I was taking a university class at the hospital a couple of years ago, and I am super cheap. I do not like paying for parking. I avoid paying for parking at all costs. And so this was a class that was happening during the fall, and we had a really cold fall that year. And so it was like minus 40 degrees Celsius with the wind chill. And I refused to drive to the hospital and pay their obscene parking rates. So I actually drove to my parents' house, which was closer to the hospital. And then I would hop on my bike and ride my bike in minus 40. And so if you can picture this person on a bike with a massive giant sleeping bag, puffy coat, like it literally looks like a sleeping bag with a face.
With red hair and a broken nose.
Yeah, but my hair was totally concealed because I had on like a face mask. I had ski goggles on, and I had pants. Like I was fully decked out in all the layers because minus 40 makes for a very cold commute by bike, but I refused to pay for parking. So
okay.
I just looked like someone who was super hardcore. And you know what else? I was also wearing a boot. I had a boot on at that time because I was healing a broken foot.
And we're detecting a trend here. There's a theme to Vanessa's life.
Yeah.
But no, that is very Canadian of you. Much like trying to run to the car mechanic in 102 degrees was very Texan of me. So we are just living very true to ourselves. That's for sure. Guys, we're going to throw this question out to you, our audience. I know triathletes are creative. I know we can find a lot of good excuses to get out the door for a run or a bike ride. So I'm sure our audience has some good answers here on an errand you have run either with your feet or your bike instead of a car. We will throw this question out to you on the I'm Trotted Facebook group. Let us know what you've done. Can't wait to hear what you have to say.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Before we get too deep into the show today, I want to give a shout out to our good friends at UCAN. Here at Tri Dot, we are huge believers in using UCAN to fuel our training and racing. In the crowded field of nutrition companies, what separates UCAN from the pack is the science behind Live Steady, the key ingredient in UCAN products. While most energy powders are filled with sugar or stimulants that cause a spike and crash, UCAN energy powders, powered by Live Steady, deliver a steady release of complex carbs to give you stable blood sugar and provide long-lasting energy. I personally fuel many of my workouts with the orange-flavored Edge gel, but between their energy mix, energy bars, almond butter, and more, there is definitely a Live Steady product that you will love. So head to their website, ucan.co, and use the code TRIDOT to save 20% on your entire order. Us triathletes know that temperature, humidity, and elevation have a significant impact on our training and racing metrics. But how do we know how much to adjust our pace or our wattage in the summer heat or the humidity or when training at a higher elevation? Today, Jeff Boer and Jeff Rains will explain how TriDot's EnviroNorm technology accounts for these variables to keep our training and racing spot on. So Jeff Rains, let's start at the top today with just the why. You know, why are there training intensities? You know, just the paces and the powers that we hold in a particular session. You know, why are these so important to get right?
Well, our intensities are prescribed and optimized in a way that's catered to achieving specific results and outcomes to achieve a specific purpose. And the goal in general of training is to be able to maintain a higher pace or speed over a set distance. And there are certain types of these workouts that are set to achieve those specific purposes and to support different goals. It's how we mix and match these different types of workouts and their underlying variables inside of them that we are able to kind of maximize our own potentials and our performance levels. So, for example, you've got, you know, your intensity runs, you've got your long runs, tempos, you know, what does it all mean, right? And so there's kind of, long story short, three main categories here.
The variables too, duration, intensity, frequency, technique, and sequence. How you're pulling those five different levers.
Within an individual session.
Making up the sets.
Those matter.
Inside of each of these three types of even workouts, yes. All mean something,
and
right?
Then the rest in between the intervals, how long the rest is.
Whether it's 2 minutes in between those intervals
complete
or
rest,
3 minutes.
Partial rests.
Those really, really hardcore run workouts that only give me 1 minute of
right.
rest in between.
That's all very intentional and purposeful.
And just creating one plan with all of those crazy variables for one person for one season just seems like a nightmare. You go cross-eyed, a headache. But imagine doing that for every single individual person and optimizing their plan. And as, you know, hiccups or things come along the way, changing, monitoring that plan inside of us. So there's just a lot that goes on. But anyways, you know, we've got our interval training. You know, some people kind of know it as that HIIT training or high intensity interval training. But the concept here is, you know, kind of alternating between high and low intensities. And that's trying to achieve a balance of utilizing different energy systems and building kind of your aerobic capacity, let's say. And this in turn builds your speed and efficiency of the cardiovascular system. Right. So that's kind of your speed. Long runs, the key purpose is to develop our aerobic endurance and tolerance, musculature, skeletal aspect as well. And unlike aerobic capacity from interval training, which is your max speed and max capacity of the cardiovascular system, to exchange oxygen and aerobic endurance here, though, is kind of like a different, kind of like different gears in your car, let's say. And you'll use here for long runs, you'll use like a moderate gear or like a level over a longer distance.
Okay.
And that's kind of known as your running economy.
So you're not working your engine as hard, you're just working it for longer.
Exactly. And then you kind of have like somewhere in between intervals and long runs are kind of like your tempos. And these are designed for distances typically shorter than kind of a goal race distance at a pace that is at that kind of race effort, and sometimes maybe a little bit faster. But they're typically even paced and can be split into multiple segments inside of a workout as well. And these help teach kind of that grit factor we always talk about, and also kind of just being comfortable at being uncomfortable at faster efforts and longer sets. So it kind of builds a tolerance factor there. But how far, how long, and how fast should these be, right? So all of these variables, long story short, kind of like long runs build your endurance. Short, hard intervals build your speed, and these kind of like fartleks, tempos, or these targeted runs, let's say, test your speed endurance at a target or projected race effort.
And so having those sets, having those different types of training sessions is important, you know, and so we want to get the paces right because those specific paces are designed to test those different parts of our running, in, you know, running and cycling engines. And so what temperature and what environment those sessions are done in, we want to make sure that we're not a zone two run on a hot day, you know, might not work what it's supposed to work if we're not accounting for the environment. And that's where
think about even the time and the pace is how critical that is. If your objective, and that's the whole principle behind intervals, if your objective is to get a certain amount of time duration in at your threshold pace, for example, and you could go out and do that 30 minutes straight, or you could break it up into three sets of 12 minutes with 1 minute rest. So you are able to partially recover, and it allows you to get six more minutes in that session. So it's very specific, but if you go too fast, then you're gonna blow up and you're not gonna get it. You know, you only get to 28 minutes and then you're cooked.
Yeah.
Or if you don't go hard enough, then you're not taxing the right energy system and you're not getting the benefit of it. So
yeah.
And then there could be an overflow into other workouts. And so now that ruins other workouts.
Cascade
and then
just, effect.
Yeah, cascade the overflow, yeah.
So wanting to get the paces right and get these intervals right in our sessions, it's important to know the temperature and the environment in which these sessions are being done. And so the way Tridot accounts for the external environment for each workout session, it's just another example of how Tridot is helping athletes do the right training right each and every day. So Tridot's technology for adjusting to the environment is called EnviroNorm, or eNorm for short. Jeff, how did eNorm come to be?
Well, the primary research for Tridot started 2004, 2005 timeframe. And after about, it took about 4 or 5 years, maybe 5 or 6 years to get the foundational metrics and develop some of the standardization and normalization methodologies to look at the data, construct the data, to be able to do some of the analysis and optimization. So after that time, we started shifting to look at some of the other ways where we could factor in outside factors, you know, to isolate the training. You have to know, you know, isolate some of these other things.
What's affecting the body in training? Yeah,
correct. So yes. And so there's things that are outside external factors affecting the body. And so you have to separate the performance variations that you're seeing in the data and the response to that from what is environmental versus what is a response to the training. So what is performance improvement or lack of improvement or stagnation? What is just changes in the outside environmental conditions? So we wanted to account for those. And so over time, we kind of did all the literature, everything out there, everyone who'd already done some work, and there's a bunch of different approaches to doing that. So we found which ones work the best and then validate that with our own data. So create basically what became eNorm, EnviroNorm technology to kind of back out the noise in the data and be able to assess and draw those cause and effect conclusions about, you know, what training is effective and how much and what's optimal.
Yeah. Cause I mean, if you're an athlete and you're just not considering environment, you know, normally, or some of those other external factors, I mean, you know, you would just probably go through the year just thinking that you're getting faster and getting slower. Cause I think back to, you know, I had a 5K assessment back in March where I PR'd my 5K, and as Andrew, the average athlete, the run is my best. And so my 5K PR back in March was 18:16. And then just a few weeks ago, I 5K assessed again, and my 5K was 18:46. And so you just look at that and you're like, oh man, like I'm getting worse. I'm not improving. I mean,
And so Enorm tells me that the effort was around the same. So I'm not, you know, unproving, but for athletes that don't consider that, you just go throughout the year thinking that as the temperatures drop, oh, look how much faster I'm getting. But you're not thinking about the fact that, well, it's getting cooler outside and vice versa. So, you know, just talking through those external factors and the internal factors, I know Tri-Dot uses both in optimizing an athlete's training. And internally, you know, we have, looking at biological information, we have our genetics, mm-hmm. which Podcast Episode 7 was all about our physiogenomics and how Tri-Dot takes your genetic information mm-hmm. to internally optimize your training. And externally, we have Enorm.
Sandwich with the training in the middle, and you have the outside being the environment and the wind and the all of that stuff, and inside it's your DNA. Both of those have influences, and if you don't know how they're influencing you and to what degree, then you can't really optimize what's in the middle, which is that training.
Yeah, and so Podcast Episode 7, if folks go back and listen to that, it kind of talks about the internal factors on how our genetics affect how we train. But tell me how the external, how Enorm actually works in accounting for the differences in external environment.
Yep. So obviously it's adjusting your paces and power, you know, your FTP on all the paces derived from your FTP, which is your functional threshold pace, functional threshold power, to accommodate or to account for the environment. So that's a process. It's a two-step process. It's kind of bi-directional rather than two steps, I guess. One is, so it takes performances. It could be an assessment. It could be a race. It could be just a workout. And your data file from, you know, XYZ location at certain altitude, certain temperature, humidity. And then it normalizes that back to base values. So what would that individual athlete, what would you have done if it had been at the base values of sea level, 59 degrees, 30% humidity?
Which is like just the optimal.
It's like the, yes, yeah. Like this, that's the base, you know, that's like, there's a reference point. That is the base reference point for normalization. So normalization goes from an actual somewhere theoretical or, you know, whatever environment that is anywhere in the world and normalizes it back to a base value. Then the other, going the other direction from base to any other location or environment is called localization. So now you're localizing, you know, the athlete's base value for their FTP and other metrics. So you're able to push that out and environment normalize it in a localizing fashion. So your environment localizing it to, you know, Denver, Colorado at, you know, whatever, or yeah. Galveston, Texas, 90 degrees and 80% humidity, you know, whatever that is, and be able to account for that and to prescriptively give the appropriate paces on what you should do so that you're in those right zones for the right amount of time.
Cause it makes a big difference. I mean, I remember, you know, vacationing in Colorado Springs and just walking around Garden of the Gods, you know, day one in Colorado Springs, I was winded versus I can run at sea level in Galveston and be more comfortable, you know, in a better heart rate place, yep. a lower heart rate running in Galveston than walking in Colorado Springs.
It makes a big difference. And not only the location, but time of day. So think even morning to afternoon. Some places have pretty, you know, static temperature, but some will have a 20, 30 degree swing in temperature and humidity during the same day. We actually had some users that'll, they're in Sedona and they were, you know, increasing 2,000 to 3,000, 4,000 feet from where they train to where they live.
Wow.
And so there's this big delta depending on where they did the workout that day.
Yeah.
And so they need to account for that. So you have the two directions, bi-directional, you normalize it back to base values, for a consistent reference point. From that reference point, we can analyze all the, you know, tens of thousands of athletes and look at the data and know, okay, this is not environment related. So we can look at the optimization algorithms there, and then you can localize it and prescribe, for any athlete anywhere in the world, any, you know, time of the day in those environments. Then there's two layers, they're call them impact layers that you normalize for. One is they're internal and external. Internal, we're not talking DNA here. We do that. That's a separate thing. But this is still the environment effects. It affects you internally. And what that means is it addresses all the factors that have physiological impact on your ability to perform, your ability to do work. For example, elevation, there's less oxygen. So that has the impact that you can't breathe as much. You have to breathe more.
And that's an impact on your body internally,
that physiologically,
ability to breathe. Yep. Yeah.
And the same temperature, humidity, combined to have a certain heat. So your body diverts blood to, you know, from your muscles to your skin surface to cool yourself.
Yeah.
When you don't have to do that, you have more blood.
So your heart is working harder internally.
Exactly.
Because of the temperature.
internal factors that inhibit your ability to produce work or to perform. Then there's the external variables, and those are things that have a physical impact on the results of your performance. So how, at whatever level you perform, you're putting out the work. So it's not that you can't put out the work,
yeah,
but what results do they produce? So in that case is, you know, wind speed and direction, wind exposure. You know, are you in a cavernous area or lots of buildings? Or are you out on the plains or the desert, grassland or a beach or coast?
Yep.
What's the topography like? Is it, you know, a lot of rolling hills? Is it flat? Is it uphill? Surface conditions? What kind of, you know, how smooth is road you're riding or running on? If you're in the water, is there a current? What the water type, is it salt water? You have more buoyancy, you're wearing a wetsuit.
So is there externally pool length, will impact,
yeah,
you?
Yeah, the format of the pool. How often are you pushing off?
Yeah.
So there's all of these things that you can normalize for to translate, whether it's a race performance or a training set, back to a base value and assess, okay, factor out internal and external environmental factors. What were the results of that set? And then prescriptively, you know, prescribing that back out.
Yeah, and just to make that tangible for athletes, I know for me, my first couple of years in the sport, I would, I had an Excel, you know, kind of Google sheet. And after every single race, I would sit down and I would log my splits. I would log kind of what the temperature was that day. I would log, just kind of hand notes on, you know, was it a hilly course? Was it, you know, did the swim have current? And that was my way of looking back just very amateurly at, okay, yeah, this race, I my time might've been a little bit slower, but yeah, look at the elevation. And cause you're trying to compare for yourself.
Yeah.
How did I do on this race versus that other race? Yeah. Am I improving? Am I getting faster? Was that a really good race for me, or did I underachieve in that race? And so, you know, when you're talking about even just on an individual training session, bringing it back to that base level, bringing it back to that baseline, it gives us a way of comparing, how did that training session go? How did that race go? Well, we've environment normalized, or we've enormed it. Yep. We've normalized the data. And so we can know this is how it actually went. So there are some athletes out there, and there are some, most coaches out there. I mean, they don't really take all this into account.
Some athletes don't.
And no one. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
it has to get different. Like,
pretty much all. I mean, you take into account the fact that, you know, it's hot outside, so you temper your expectations, right? But that's about all you do, right? You don't know scientifically, you know, data wise, how to adjust your workout. And so TriDot is the only one in the game doing this, and really on this level of detail, taking environment into consideration on every single training session. So,
yep, we have patents pending, of course, on this.
Yeah,
of course. But we've done a lot of this extensive research. This, you know, particular component of the technology we've been working on for more than 10 years, and so we have multiple patents filed in the U.S. and abroad. So,
yeah. So tell me for the athletes out there that aren't currently, you know, leveraging this into their training, you know, what are the consequences of not environment normalizing your training?
So you kind of alluded a little bit to it earlier. I mean, your 5K that you were talking about, Andrew, you ran one in a month or two or whatever later, and you slowed down, and, you know, mentally you may have thought, man, I lost fitness.
I'm detraining.
Yeah. Or now maybe you even go, you know, your next month or two training at zones and paces based off of that slower 5K, but yet you're a number of months into training, you got to be fitter, you got to be faster. But you just did that 5K assessment in conditions that were hotter or whatever than that first test. And so now you're maybe a little bit bummed out. Maybe your man has slowed down. So maybe there's the mental, the morale aspect to it all. But really, if you used the enorm factor here, maybe physiologically, internally, maybe your body thinks you didn't slow down 30 seconds, you know, or let's say maybe you did slow down 30 seconds, but physiologically your body may have thought you actually ran 45 seconds faster. So you actually had a 15-20 second personal record. And so that's kind of what it does. And so now we can establish much more accurate training and pace zones, kind of no matter what conditions you run in. We can normalize those down and generate going forward much more accurate training zones. But if you don't use this technology, you know, there can be training loss, right? You can overtrain, you can undertrain, and maybe not being able to complete a session, you know, down the line. And so a good example here. Dad,
if one athlete that I just acquaintances with didn't use TriDot, was just doing a run, he's only running, but he was complaining about just the Texas heat, and he had his, you know, the training he was doing, I don't know where he got it from, but his 3x8 minute at threshold was the set he was supposed to do. So he needed 3x8, that's 24 minutes at threshold at a certain pace. But he said, yeah, halfway into the second, you know, effort, I just blew up. I just couldn't do anymore. So he didn't get hardly any of the benefit of that whole session.
Because he was running too hard for the environment.
And so he did the first one, halfway through the second one, blew up. He didn't get half of it. And in that kind of workout, you need the whole 24 minutes. The first 12 is not going to help you a lot. So he missed a whole session.
You know,
the benefit of that session, you can't go back and do it tomorrow.
And just to quantify how much a environment can affect what your threshold pace should be. I mean, so using that example, 3x8 minutes for me, you know, we're recording this episode during summertime in Texas. And so obviously there's going to be different environment factors throughout the year and depending on where people live, you know, but for us, so my threshold pace in 98 degrees at 8:30 PM in Texas, will currently at this present time be around 7 minute miles. Whereas, you know, normally that's closer to 6:10, 6:15, 6:20. And so you're talking not just a little bit, but right. I need to be slowing down anywhere from 40 to 45 seconds per minute per mile to be running in the right zone.
Right.
And so if in this guy's scenario, if he doesn't know that, I mean, he's running almost a minute per mile potentially too fast. And then, blowing up and not getting the workout in.
Yeah. And like we can be stubborn as athletes and we know it's hot and we know we should slow down, but we still want to hit that goal
I'll
pace.
Just push harder.
It's got to look good on Strava, Jeff.
and actually this athlete that Boer was just talking about, you know, he got 50% of the quality in, but let's say 90% of the gains you're going to get out of that workout might occur in the last couple minutes. Of that 24 minutes.
First of most interval sets or most workouts, the first half to two thirds are priming you for that last portion of the workout. All the gain is at the last part.
It's like a Tour de France like race stage where the first 90% of the stage is just to wear the guys out for the last little bit.
To get you conditioned and primed to accept the overload training at the end.
So let's just kind of use a kind of a fun example here. If you're not kind of using this Enorm technology, you're kind of winging it. You're kind of guessing, okay, I should slow down a little bit because it's hot. Let's put this into perspective. Let's just say you're 16 weeks out to a marathon. Okay, you know, 4 months. Great. I got plenty of time to get ready for that marathon, right? I got 4 full months. But actually, if you're going to do your assessments monthly, right, you're going to update your fitness, your zones, and all of that. 4 of those weeks there will be assessments, right?
Recovery weeks and periodized training.
Yeah. And so the rest of that week, you got recovery and all sorts of stuff. So 4 weeks of the 16 are already out right there. So you have 12 more weeks. Right, to really train. But then you got probably close to a 2 week taper leading up to the last couple weeks there of the marathon. So really you only have 10 weeks of the 16 to super capitalize on maybe a long run session, because we're only doing one of those a week. In that one hard interval session per week, right? So we have 10 more opportunities, 10 more weeks essentially to really capitalize, even though we're 16 weeks out. If you don't use this Enorm technology in your overtraining or undertraining, and you miss just one long run, or you have this scenario that this gentleman had, right?
He only got go too hard or too soft on a long run or an interval run.
You've wasted that entire week.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not one session, it's the week, because you only get one of those workouts per week.
Yeah.
Until the next one comes, right? And so let's just say, you know, you're 16 weeks out, but I just mentioned you really kind of only have 10 of these kind of quality weeks, let's say, to capitalize on these things. But you got 1, 2, or 3 not perfect workouts, because not every workout is perfect, right? Inside of that, I mean, you are really, really losing 10 to 20% of your potential.
I'm like stressed out right now.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I need to start getting ready for my next race, like right now.
And this, this isn't it should scare some people essentially, but like if you're 16 weeks out from a marathon, really you only have 10 opportunities to really capitalize on your potential. And if you just have one bad session, you get halfway through that long run and you have 10%. To call it quits. That's 10%.
Yeah.
Right there, you're 16 weeks out and one bad workout, you have just taken your race down potentially 10%.
Mm-hmm. Not 10% of your time, but 10% of your improvement potential.
Yeah.
You know, it happens twice, that's 20%, 1/5 of the amount that you could have
improved.
And the thing is not to freak people out, not to all be so hypersensitive, but it's to use the tools and technologies available to make the most from every opportunity.
There's a reason we've gone through all the, and I say we as in you, there's a reason you've gone through all the effort to figure this out and get it right and dial it in to where athletes can leverage this in every single session.
It makes a huge difference. So much, we're not even touching on, you know, injury and some of these other things, that it's the consistency of your training week after week after week that matters. And when you have these fluctuations, overtraining, undertraining, that's when injuries happen and you don't know you're overloading yourself as much as you are. You bump up the volume, you bump up something else. But if you also do it in hotter weather, you know, there's a number of things that can happen that lead to injury. And that cumulative effect of all of those is the big killer.
What a lot of people also don't take into account, which we are, is how the weather changes during a race or during a workout.
Which can be significant.
Yeah. I mean, if you're out on that Ironman course for 12 hours, let's say, the wind isn't the exact same, you know, coming from the same direction or the same mile per hour, the entire sustained 12
Even
hours.
Even in a 1 hour run outside, the wind can change.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the hills are 8% for a mile, some are 3% for 10 miles. And so all of these factors are just, it's really, really cool. And so we are accommodating for those things.
Yeah, and that's getting a little bit ahead on RaceX. So we can maybe cover that in a different
That's
podcast.
A whole different, we want to make sure people know how much goes into prepping you for race day and getting the weather right and the execution in the weather right on race day. So that will be a part of a RaceX specific podcast for sure.
I'll have another couple of examples of how it affects people in scenarios where they don't really realize
the
consequence. Yes. One is early in the year, a lot of people do an assessment or have, you know, come February, they have their run paces, their bike power, whatever that is. Let's just say run paces. And then as they continue training and it gets warmer and the paces need to get slower. And so they keep pushing at the faster paces, but it's gradual. So they're gradually effectively overtraining. They're doing more than they should. So they're not getting the benefit of the workout and they're causing too much stress, more than they can recover from, but they're not realizing it. So that builds this chronic overtraining,
cumulative
training load. So they don't really, and they feel like they're plateaued. So they're plateaued because they keep overtraining on these workouts and they're not recovering from the workout. So their body's not absorbing that training. So it's just gradual over time. And then, you know, they're frustrated because they're using non-normalized intensities and they're perceiving it as a plateau, but they could have been getting faster if actually they slowed down a bit, did the workout they're supposed to, get their full time in each duration at the right intensity, and then they would have been improving.
Without looking at E-norm, they wouldn't know they're supposed to be slowing down.
Correct.
And so you feel like, oh, man, yeah, I'm not keeping the pace I should be keeping.
Yep. And another one you mentioned to, alluded to before, of just the getting cooler and people drawing connections, you know, false conclusions. That happens a lot in marathon training. There's a lot of people, it's kind of a fallacy that, oh, when I do marathon training, I really want to work on my run this year, so I'm going to do marathon training. And they train long and they associate that good running that they do because a lot of marathons are, you know, in the winter months.
Yeah.
And so that's, it gets cooler.
So they train, so, they train in the winter.
And all of their times are
cooler. Training in warmer climates and on race day.
Correct. So in the winter, they're training in cool climates and their run pacing is faster. And so they associate, my running gets better.
This run training is really working.
Yeah. With marathon. And then so, but it's the cooler weather. And so they're not accounting they're drawing a conclusion about the training when the biggest factor of that is the environment, not the training itself. And so then they do the wrong training. They don't improve the threshold.
Oh, they think because they're running longer, they're getting faster.
Yeah,
but
so all
it's
this
just
marathon
cooler
training is really good.
They're getting faster just because it's getting cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct. And then, so they're not doing the right training. That's helping them increase their FTP and overuse all those other, you know, dangers and harms that come from that, from an injury standpoint too.
So just kind of getting into the nuts and bolts of how it really works, what it really does. You know, tell me this, you know, where does TriDot pull all this environmental data from?
Well, the data comes from a number of different sources. One is the device itself. So after the fact.
So whether you're wearing your Garmin, your Polar,
so it's going to pull in. And so that'll override it. If you're pulling in device data, that's what happens. So that's kind of after the fact when it's normalizing back from actual to the base normalization. But other than that, we'll use weather feeds. We have multiple weather feeds. So we're checking those and prescribing it based on the time of day of the session. And then the location in your TriDot settings for each session, you can say, and you can have defaults, like I want, you know, all my indoor to be at this temperature. This is the temperature, you know, the location. So you can set those indoor settings for each one, and then it'll take your, either you can set it to your current location, which is where you are. It looks at location services on your device, smartphone or computer, laptop, or your home location. And so it's kind of this descending. If there's information in the device, it uses that. If there's not information in the device, it uses weather feeds. If it doesn't have the weather feeds, you know, then it goes to predefined settings for inside workouts.
Okay.
And then goes the same thing. If you say current location, grabs that. If you don't have a current location, then it uses your home location. And you can always go in and modify it, manually enter it. That's an important thing.
Yeah. So after the fact, if you look at it and for whatever reason, your device thought it was 83 degrees and you know, it was 93 degrees
right.
After the fact, you can tell it, no, it was really 93.
Yeah.
Okay. So sometimes when we have podcasts like this, where we're really, talking through a feature of TriDot that I know athletes ask about regularly, I'll reach out to Cindy, who is our lead TriDot support, a team member, and I'll say, hey, you know, we're covering this. I know you get questions about this. You know, what are the top things you want people to know about this feature of TriDot? And so Cindy, very specifically, and you talking about kind of the home address reminded me of this. She was like, remind people, for the love of everything good and holy in this world, remind people to, on their account, have the correct home address. Because if you move, if you don't put that data in there,
yep.
You know, if you live at 6,000 feet and TriDot does not know that, it is not in, you know, environment normalizing your workouts for 6,000 feet. So it's got to know where you're at. And so for me, it knows I live in Flower Mound, Texas. It's 537, you know, feet above sea level. And it knows that. And so wherever you're at, I mean, go check your settings, make sure that's right, because that is crucial.
Flower Mound is 5,000 feet.
500. Flower Mound's 500. 537 feet above sea level.
In Texas.
Like, oh my gosh.
It's just a few miles from here.
It's a long uphill drive to Flower Mound. But and the other thing with that is too, if you're ever traveling or if you're ever somewhere that I mean, you gave the example earlier of the guy who lives, you know, in a place where
Sedona, and Flagstaff,
you can be at 6,000 feet, you can be at 2,000 feet, depending on whether you're at home or at work. So yeah. Before your workout, you know, go in, tell TriDot, okay, I'm working out at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. This is where I'm going to be, and make sure it knows that it can get your workout and your environment normalization right.
Yeah. And there's two things there. One is your home address. That's, you don't have to put that in your account, but it's good that we use it for that.
Yeah.
So it's not required, for any billing, or we're not going to mail you anything like that, but that's what we use it for, the address there. And the other thing is when you first log on, it says share your location. So that location sharing. And so just give permission to do that when you log on, like Google Maps, all of that.
Yeah.
They need to know where you're at to be able to use the app. It's the same way. And so you'll be able to hit current location, wherever you're at, it'll
perfect.
Update.
Do it, people. Do it. It helps a lot. It helps you get it right. So tell me this, guys. What impact can an athlete expect eNorm to have just on the day-to-day training? You know, should we always check our workout in advance to see if the zones have changed? Or does it really take extreme conditions, those hot summer days, those cold winter days, high elevation, before training intensities need to be adjusted?
You know, it's quick, it's simple. Just you know, pull up the phone app, log in on your desktop. It's not hard to do. So the answer is 100% yes. You know, log in before your workout, right before, or hopefully within.
So just make sure. Yeah, it's going to be
within
right.
An hour. And kind of, you know, Boomer mentioned earlier too, that like some people live in areas where like, you know, a 10-hour window, you know, the temperature is not going to change more than a degree or two. So, you know, it may not be as, you know, prevalent to do that, but, you know, for a lot of us, man, that weather swings a lot all day long. And so it is very important that if you want to get the most out of this kind of eNorm technology here and the most out of your training, that you do log in before the session. I just recently moved from Central Texas to West Texas, and I went from 400 feet elevation to 3,000 feet elevation.
Yeah.
And
not 5,000 feet.
And I did a test, and I got my 20 minute, you know, FTP bike test, my monthly TriDot assessment, and I got the exact same watts as I got from a month or two ago. And, you know, I was like, okay, well, I haven't lost fitness. I moved, you know, whatever. And I was a little bit bummed. I did both tests indoors, 70 degrees, about 30% humidity. I was within one beat of the same kind of average heart rate, max heart rate that I achieved. And I was just thinking like, man, what is going on here? I've been training hard. Why didn't I improve? Well, then I went back in there and I updated the city.
Where you lived, yeah.
And that, you know, 2,500, 2,600 feet of elevation change, actually the eNorm gave me an 8-watt improvement.
Ooh.
So even though in person, in real time, I achieved the exact same score, the exact same average watts for that 20-minute period, that eNorm then saw that, flagged it. I was at a little bit of elevation.
Because it knew it took more of an effort to match what you had done at a lower elevation.
Yeah, and now my zones are a little bit different going forward for the next month until
I test
again.
So, tell me this, because I've had athletes ask me this before. I know they've asked you guys, the coaches, this before, because our athletes do want to do the right training right, and they want to get it right. And so, you know, athletes that have heard us talk about, okay, put in your location ahead of time, let TriDot know, you know, the temperature, where your workout's going to be. And so they'll do that. And then they go, they do their run, they do their bike, they come back inside, their Garmin watch, their unit, you know, uploads the data. And then all of a sudden the zones change just a little bit. Right. And it's just a little bit, but it's enough to maybe affect our TrainX score just a pinch. Why do we see a difference between our zones going into the workout and coming out of the workout if we've updated where we're at in advance?
Yeah, you know, I mean, weather is not a perfect science. You know, even the weathermen have been perfecting these things for decades now, and you know, then says it's going to rain and it
weathermen
doesn't.
Weathermen can be fallible.
So yeah, I mean, you look at your training within an hour. Okay, it's supposed to be 90 degrees. You go out to a track and your watch reports 92 degrees. I mean, it is what it is. And so there are unique cases in there.
So on the front end, you know, TriDot is pulling the weather data from a weather service, correct? And then on the back end, it's the watch actually out in that environment reading and reporting what it's seeing, and that then...
Yeah, there's a projected versus kind of a historic weather pattern there, and the device also has a temperature gauge. Most devices out there have temperature gauges inside of them, and sometimes, you know, actually there are defaults in some of these things, or sometimes body heat plays into the actual temperature as well. So if it's 30 degrees out, but your body heat reports 40 degrees, or that device reports 40 degrees, so there are different manufacturers and recommendations on things to do there, depending on kind of which device you're using to collect that data. But TriDot will accommodate that actual weather as well. And then you can also, like you said, if there was a unique discrepancy there from a device, let's say, you can go in and manually update or complete those.
So you can manually update it after the fact. For sure. Adjust it and then retouch the file. But then before, if you go over the training intensities page, you can go in and put in whatever you want. So even if ahead of time, you know, all TriDot can do and all any person can do is make the most of the data that you have available.
Yeah.
So if the data is there, we can use it. If it's not there, we can't use it. We don't know what it is. So if it's a little warmer than, you know, you thought it was, just adjust as best you can. You're going to get a whole lot closer because it's already pretty accurate to start with.
And for me, it's never, I've had this happen a few times myself. It's never far off, right? It might change my zone, you know, 5, 10, 20 seconds tops. But you're not losing the purpose of that workout.
Right.
So Jeff, you kind of gave the example of your bike assessment, you know, where, you know, 1 month you were in at a lower elevation, and the next month you were at a higher elevation. I kind of gave my 5K example of being, in a cooler temperature in March versus having a slower 5K, but still bumping the dot because I was testing in the summer. So when athletes go look at their assessment page, they're going to see very clearly on the page, you know, the time that they're recording for that assessment and then the EN time for that assessment. So we've kind of both given examples for some context, but what are the other things athletes need to know about how environment normalization affects their assessment?
What's really cool, and it seems like there's a lot going on here, and there kind of is, but the beauty of it all is you don't necessarily have to fully understand it, which we have this podcast here to help in that aspect. But there's basically three layers to what we're doing here. And so TriDot knows the conditions at which you do your assessments, your tests. You do, you know, periodic tests to update your fitness and your zones going forward. We need to know how your fitness has changed so we can adjust your zones. And so TriDot knows the conditions at which you do your test. So now we can establish much more accurate training zones, right? Well, then there's a whole other layer to it all, in that each day when you do your training, TriDot knows the weather and how it changes basically every hour throughout the day. So every day when you do your training, TriDot knows the conditions at which you do your training, and it normalizes that data and localizes it and gives you much more accurate power and paces, right? So your heart rate zones in TriDot always stay the same until you test again.
right? So that power for cycling and those pace zones for running will change all day long as the weather changes in your city, to try to keep your heart rate the same, and you get those physiological, you know, more accurate effects from that, right? So that would be the second layer. Then kind of the third layer in all of this is kind of what your future races are, right? We're not just training you for 70.3 miles, 140.6 or whatever. You can customize all these distances in your races and try to, but we know that kind of historic and projected weather of your race coming up as well. We know the temperature, humidity, the elevation gain within the, you know, flat courses and hilly courses are different, right? And so that third layer is we are training you for the conditions that you're going to be racing in for your individual fitness levels on your specific conditions on your specific race course. And so we can normalize your race day strategy and how to race on your specific course inside of all that, which would kind of be that third layer.
Yeah. So another race you might be run, you know, biking 112 miles, and that could be a 6 hour effort or 5 hour effort, or, you know, 7.5 or 6:45. So that there could be a big difference there in what you're training for. And so if you need to go for a certain amount of time on race day, based on the terrain, all the environmental conditions, we know that your long ride needs to be, you know, X proportion of that. And so we're adjusting your long rides. How much are you going to build up in the long ride from week to week to week?
It knows I'm going to take longer at Lake Placid than at Ironman Texas.
Yeah, exactly. And there, a lot of coaches use this. It's on Google, but you just to establish or prescribe training zones, right? The old school way of coaching is, okay, go do a 5K. Great, you ran a 20-minute 5K. Okay, you should be able to run a 3:20 marathon.
Nope.
Okay, great. Well, now you're going to go do Lake Placid full Ironman, yeah. Right? Are you going to train for 3:20 all year long, right? You're not going to be maybe, you know, fit enough to do that to later on in the season, or you still got a long swim and a long bike. So do you add 10 minutes to that, 20 minutes to that?
Or I might have done that 5K in February and Lake Placid isn't in February.
There you go. And there's just so many things. And like, so do you add 10, 20 minutes to that 3:20 because you're swimming and biking before? But what if there's 5,000 feet of climbing on the bike and there's 1,000 feet of climbing on the run? Do you guess and add another 10 or 20 minutes to that marathon time off the bike? Right. And so, you know, coaches have gotten decent at kind of guessing that, you know, they may have raced that course. They have an idea of all that. But if you want to be exact, there's just nothing out there.
Use the data. Use the data that Enorm has.
The data doesn't lie.
And get it right. Yeah. So whether we are just kind of getting to know a new training partner or just kind of talking shop with another athlete, you know, we often kind of go through this comparison list. You know, what's your FTP? What's your 5K pace? What's your base 100 in the pool? You know, et cetera, et cetera. And when we talk about FTP, you know, we're used to talking about these like it's an absolute number, and it just kind of gets ingrained in you. Oh, my FTP is a 181. My FTP is a this. My FTP is that. And when we talk about Enorm and we're talking about assessments, you know, just now, Reigns, and it's making me think, if we're so used to talking about FTP like it's an absolute, it feels like when you talk about when you incorporate the environment, FTP shouldn't be absolute.
Yes and no. So yes, absolute in the sense of your fitness at any one time is absolute, but the way that's expressed depends on the conditions under which it's expressed. So your fitness may be the same, but what that turns into on one day, one time of day, in one environment to another could be different.
Yeah.
And so
it translates to a different outcome.
Yeah, translates to a different outcome. Exactly right. So when you're thinking FTP and how that's expressed and your paces are going to change in your workout, and also when you're measuring stress, we're talking about a lot prescriptively here on what your paces should be and what should your FTP, if it's, you know, you're working at 90% of that or 75%, whatever your workout is, that FTP value is changing. So your prescription changing, but also when you're measuring training stress after the fact. So not only looking at performance improvement, but when you're calculating how stressful was that, different types of day, your FTP changes. So the percents of the FTP change. So the amount of stress from different types of workouts is also dynamic. So your FTP is dynamic, your results from, you know, performances and training is dynamic, as well as the assessment values and the stress values to that same doesn't stay the same day to day.
Yeah, so we need to be humble in knowing that, okay, even if I know my FTP might be right now 180,
yep,
that doesn't mean I can hold 180 watts for an hour in 100 degree temperatures. Like, yep. It's going to flex.
You can think of it back to the base values. My Enorm FTP is, And that number is the same until you retest.
Okay.
Test it different. So that's the environment normalized. What it would be at 59 degrees, 30% humidity at sea level.
So kind of last question, you know, that I have when I think about, you know, environment normalization and its impact on our training. So let's kind of land the plane here in the main set with this. You know, if my race coming up, you know, is whether it's hot, whether it's humid, whether it's at altitude, is there any value in trying to train in those conditions, or can I train where I'm at with the weather I've got and let eNorm kind of guide me on race day?
Well, I think, you know, eNormalization handles, you know, those different impacts, physiology and the physics of impeding your actual results due to those external factors of the environment. It doesn't address the acclimatization, so getting used to something. So there's still that period when you get on site at altitude, or, you know, getting used to the conditions. But it does transfer your performance abilities. And okay. So that's really the thing that it's focused on. So that's about your, you know, your physiological ability and the physical results produced from that ability. But there is tremendous value in training in the conditions that are going to be as close to race day as possible.
Yeah.
From a psychological important, getting used to it, being comfortable with that, what it feels like, it feels different. Even though you're working just on your cable,
absolutely.
It just feels different. Your hydration, your fueling, all of those things change. So especially race rehearsals, the more that you can do and, you know, as near to race day scenarios and environment.
It's just biologically, your body has to adapt to those conditions biologically.
Right. Regardless of how much work you're doing.
Yeah.
You're doing stuff a little differently to do that. You know, you're going to, in different heat, you're going to tolerate stuff just digestively different. It's not a performance fitness ability, but you're going to digest differently. You know, there's less blood in your gut and your intestines. So I think it's and additionally, just the familiarity with the conditions fosters confidence. So if you're familiar with it, it's not new. On race day, there's going to be enough new stuff to deal with. So the more familiar you are and comfortable you are in that environment, the better you're going to perform.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Absolutely an excellent main set right there from episode 47 of the podcast. Tridot's ability to change your intensities based on your environment is, in my opinion, one of its best qualities. There's no one else in the training game that does this like Tridot does this. And Tridot's done this for a very long time. Vanessa, as you listened to that main set, what were maybe two or three just kind of nuggets or like main points that really jumped out to you?
I think the first one is that something that I had completely forgotten about since I listened to this episode a long time ago is that Tridot is going to take data from the assessment of the training session and then normalize it to sea level. And then from there, it's going to localize it to wherever the athlete is. It takes care of the pacing for different conditions. And that was something that was really important to me to jog my memory. I thought that was kind of cool. And the second thing that I think is really amazing, and that's something very much applied to me when I moved over here, is that the environmental normalization takes care of pacing in different conditions. So like cold or hot or high elevation or low elevation. And it will make those pacing adjustments to suit that condition. But something that is also very important to consider is that, you know, how do you feel in those conditions? Because I know that training in, you know, a dry climate is very different from training in a humid climate. You're going to feel different. And your sweat rate's going to be different. And your hydration strategy needs to be different. And I know for me, when I was, you know, in coming to Australia, when it started to get really humid and hot, I was like, what are all these blisters on my feet? Why am I getting blisters like in between my toes? Yeah, right? Yeah. And
I remember
I got my first blister during my first half Ironman. That was the first time I ever got a blister, was at that time. And then now in Australia, it's like I am very, very sure to put two Toms on my feet before I go out for a run because I don't want to get those blisters in between the toes. Those are the worst. I think it's really important to know that the paces are going to be adjusted for you, but you also have to be able to prepare yourself mentally and also for, like, you know, all of those extra things that are going to come about, like chafing even, you know, the sports bra line. Oh my gosh, it can become so annoying when you're when you're training and running in humidity. So those are things to consider as well, that are really important.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of that reminder that TriDot takes care of all of the pacing part, the training session part, but you as the athlete still have to take care of going out and getting through the session and doing the best job you can in the session with the body that you have and the mindset that you have. I know exactly what you're talking about. Like I grew up in Florida. When I moved to Texas, I just thought Texas was so stinking dry. I feel like I would go for a run. I feel like I just couldn't get enough oxygen with my breaths. And now being used to Texas, if I go back to Florida, and they're not dramatically different, but they're different enough. When I go back to Florida, like I'm like, how did I grow up playing sports here? The air is so heavy. The air is so thick. I can't breathe. Like it's suffocating me. But growing up there, I didn't think anything of it. So yeah, it's so interesting how you have to mentally get yourself ready for a different environment, even as TriDot tells you what paces you need to back off to. So super, super interesting stuff. As we alluded to in the intro today, I wanted to revisit this episode with you because you, like me, you're a very normal triathlete. And right now you have the circumstances of being very used to training in the cooler temps of Calgary, Canada. And all of a sudden you find yourself having to adjust to a much warmer climate in Sydney, Australia. What was that transition like for you? And what did you notice about your TriDot training once you made that move?
Well, it was interesting because we moved from summertime in Canada to wintertime in Australia. But I mean, winter in Australia, we have to put in very loose quotation marks because it's still pretty nice. But I do remember specifically after I got my hands on a bike trainer and I started back into getting on the bike, I put the bike trainer for a couple of my first workouts out on the deck because I was like, perfect. It's going to be so nice and cool out there. But then the sun came up really quickly and it became very, very intense heat. And I remember having to get off the bike and lay on the ground and collect myself because I was so dehydrated. I was so overtaxed. And although my training zones were appropriate, I'm not sure if this is still a bike trainer problem or if it was, just, I was so not prepared for how it was going to feel, but I was dying. Like my family was just looking at me like, are you okay? So it was still quite a huge adjustment.
No, yeah, I'm not.
I wasn't okay. But yeah, that was a really big adjustment. And then as the temperature increased and the humidity became greater, I found that it was more of a gradual change from that point on. And I actually realized that I like running in higher humidity. This seems totally atypical of a redheaded, you know, fair skinned person, but man, I actually like that feeling of I'm sweaty and I'm not getting any sweatier. Like I'm just as sweaty as I'm going to get right from the beginning. And it was kind of cool. And, but the bike, on the other hand, I do not like biking in humidity, especially indoors. It's just disgusting. So that's been an adjustment and, but it's been okay. Yeah. I do like the having had the opportunity to train in an environment that is so different from what has been normal for me for my entire life. It's been great. I really enjoy it.
Yeah. One thing I really liked from the episode and from our conversations as staff is, we talk a lot about the obvious ones are humidity and temperature because we see an immediate impact on how we feel based on humidity and temperature. But elevation is also something that's taken into account here because, you know, you doing a session at 6,000 feet in Denver, Colorado is very different from doing a session at 400 feet above sea level in Dallas, Texas, just in terms of how much oxygen you have in the air and what the elevation does to your body. And something super interesting that TriDot will do is when you go visit a location like that and you tell TriDot, okay, I'm doing my workouts this weekend in Denver, it's going to adjust your paces quite a bit for that elevation. But if you were to move to Denver, Colorado, and all of a sudden TriDot senses that, oh, you've been here for a week, now you've been here for 2 weeks, you've been here for a month, it's going to start backing off how much it changes your paces because it knows your body is actually acclimatizing to that new elevation. So super, super cool. Like how long you are in a certain environment will also play a role in what TriDot does to your training. So You, Vanessa, have been in Sydney for a while now. You're not brand new to town anymore. Do you feel like your body has adjusted to the new climate, or do you still feel like a redheaded Canadian dropped off for a run down Bondi Beach?
I do feel like I've definitely adjusted. My Garmin watch tells me that I'm getting more and more heat acclimatized. So that's been kind of interesting.
Thanks, Garmin.
Yeah, but I don't know what it's actually measuring or how accurate it is, but it's kind of neat to see.
We need a podcast episode for that.
Right. It's funny because when I first arrived here, I'm thinking now that you've said this, because I had come from such a high elevation right down to sea level, it probably had adjusted my training zones to push further to the more difficult paces and power zones. So I'm wondering if that had...
What was your elevation in Calgary?
It's 1,000 meters. So, yeah, okay. Is that 3,000 feet, I think?
Yes.
I don't know.
But you are like at sea level now.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's quite significant. And it's funny too, because I ended up going back to Calgary for a work trip after we'd been here for several months. And I do remember I went up to about 1500 meters and I was doing some runs there and I loved it so much. The air was so thin. It was so wonderful to breathe. And I thought the elevation was going to impact me a lot greater than it had, but because TriDot had, you know, changed my training zones to incorporate that elevation change, I think that's why it felt so easy. So that was really great.
All right, Vanessa, we'll close down with this. I mean, one, it's a public service announcement, but I'm also going to ask it of you. For athletes listening, this is always a reminder. Before you do a workout, if you are somewhere new, if you are in your hometown, you're just working out at a different time than you normally work out, make sure on the TriDot app you punch in, oh, I'm not doing that run at 7 a.m. when it's cool and the sun isn't up. I'm doing that run at noon and it's much warmer. TriDot will adjust for you the intensities you should be doing for that workout. It's going to make sure you don't overcook the workout or undercook the workout. So Vanessa, for you, when you moved to Sydney for the year, and when you move back to Calgary, when your time in Sydney is over, did you properly, like you're supposed to, go in your settings and tell TriDot, I am now in Sydney moving forward?
I did. That. It was probably the first thing that I did when I got off the plane. I was like, change my address. But you know what's interesting is as soon as we got to Australia, one of the first things that I did was change my location. But then when we moved to the place where we were going to be renting our place for a long period of time, there's no thermometer on the inside of the house because there's no like centralized heating or cooling system. And so I was using just the default indoor temperature setting. And again, I was finding the bike workouts to be a massive struggle. So I went out and I actually purchased a little thermometer that had a humidity meter on it as well. And it made the biggest difference, just knowing the temperature was about 4 degrees warmer than what I thought, and the humidity was about 40% greater than what was put as the default. So as soon as I changed that, everything became a little bit more manageable in terms of me hitting my paces.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.